always be attended by only those who used to drink at Dino's or Dante's or Billy Berg's Swing Club, the Angel Room, the Parisian Room, the Copper Room, the Captain's Table, Zardy's, the Encore, the Tally Ho, the Beverly Cavern, Club Alabama, the Hillcrest, the Summit, Ivy's, Chicken Shack, Jack's Basket, the Surf Club, the Strollers, the Cloister,
this is Mark Lynch,
Tiffany Lounge,
is
Trade Winds, the Hi-Hat.
My returning guest tonight, and it's a pleasure to talk to him again, is recording artist, performing artist, poet, Michael C. Ford. Michael, welcome back to the show. It's a real pleasure to talk to you again. It's great to hear your voice.
Well, radio part two, I guess.
Well, hopefully maybe part two of many parts.
I'll try not to repeat myself.
No, that's a. Anyways, I'm introing this and outroing it with some of your sound recordings, your latest sound recording, CD, Look Each Other in the Ears. First of all, I love the title of that. And the amazing thing is that this your recordings really swing. Like when you hear openers, which we just played, you know, that takes me back to when I think about jazz clubs and the way it was. When did you start doing
those? It's all reminiscence for me. It's bringing back what isn't here anymore. And I thought ideally I would talk about the lost jazz clubs of Los Angeles. Now, interestingly, a sidebar for that is some Academy Award-winning animator actually used that as a soundtrack for an animation.
Really?
Yeah.
I've got to look that up.
I think you'll have to go to Hen House Studios.
Okay.
And plug into video, and it would be... for openers, the opening track, the Lost Jazz Clubs of L.A., and you can see with this animator how the animator conceived what was going on.
I got
the corner of Westwood and Wilshire.
Oh man,
Boulevard, you know?
I got it.
That's crazy. I know it's nutty, but that's what it is.
Oh no, that cut swings, man. That's like, you know, people who listen to that, you can't like not just fall in love with that work. Your voice and the background is just perfect. And I want to talk to you about this. The musicians in the background are people like Ray Manzarek, Robbie Krieger.
Ray Manzarek played every keyboard imaginable in 2 days up at Studio D in Sausalito. And the crazy thing, how that happened...
Well, that's what I want to know, because this is like an extraordinary recording, and it's very tight.
And it was all kind of organic. I mean...
Whoa. Are you serious?
Right in the very beginning, when I knew them at UCLA, and we were hanging out in Joseph von Sternberg's directing class, if you can imagine that. He's screening Blue Angel, Blonde Venus... Scarlet Empress, and Ray and Jim were in there. That's where I met them, in that class. So it was like, and I'm thinking, gee, what's going on at UCLA now? Is there a Joseph von Sternberg teaching up there? I really seriously doubt it. I think what you've got probably is a guy who directed 8 episodes of a TV sitcom.
You're right. You're right.
Oh my God.
Okay.
That's all right, because...
No, it's not.
Today, they want to be Steven Spielberg. They want to be George Lucas. I don't think they're interested in really changing anything and making some kind of a progressive statement. I don't think that's part of the, you know, that's there's no. I think they're just a bunch of jokers in the deck. I think no, that's the.
But you know, more's the pity, because as a matter of fact, I just saw The Scarlet Empress a couple of weeks ago. I had seen it before, of course, but you see movies like that. If people are listening, if you've never seen those films, first of all, shame on you. But then it's like, go out and search them out, because man, there was a time when film was really out there.
Well, I wouldn't have seen it. I wouldn't have seen any of it if I hadn't been in that class. And Ray and Jim always wanted to go. They were so hooked on German expressionist filmmaking.
Oh, yeah.
That we were constantly going to screenings of Carl Theodor Dreyer and Fritz Lang and
Vampir, one of my favorite movies.
Vampir and Mele Facchinetti and The Passion of Joan of Arc. I mean, so somebody asked me one time if there was anybody in history that you could go, you could talk to, even though they're gone, they could come back and you could have a dialogue with them. Who would you want to talk to? And I said, Facchinetti.
Oh, man.
You know, that was my answer. And and there was just total, I mean, it was dead silence after that. I mean, is that a philosopher? I said, no. Well, yeah, she was kind of a philosopher. Yeah, yeah. You know, so... I do not make friends with the media on too much on that level.
Well, wait a minute. Okay, back to the beginning. So You're in this class. How do you decide that you're going to start doing a project together?
Oh, it wasn't even that. It was. Let me tell you. Preface it with a great story. Sternberg pulled some girl up out of the class. One of the students, pulled her up, sat her in a bent wood chair, and got up on ladders and started rearranging all the Lecos and baby Fernels that were up on racks. And
wow.
Just kind of framing her with these lights, and he literally turned her into Marlene Dietrich.
Oh, wow.
And Morrison was like... He said, I looked at him, he's just taking copious notes anyway, but this is blew his mind. And Ray also. Ray was a really prodigious filmmaker. He was a very articulate guy with a camera.
Really?
He was probably one of the best filmmakers at that school.
Huh.
Of course.
So wait a minute.
The grassroots were in that class. They cranked out a lot of jazz musicians and rock musicians.
Wow.
But not many filmmakers came out. And at that time, you got to realize there were two girls in that film class.
Wow.
Two girls. Judy Raphael and Melanie Brennan. Melanie Brennan didn't make a film, but she ended up marrying the legendary guitar player John Fahey.
Wow.
And Judy Raphael is a great story about her. She was sitting around the Gypsy Wagon, and Morrison and Manzarek are co-founding the band right there. And in fact, said, we're going to call it The Doors. Judy Raphael said, The Doors? Nobody is going to want to go and see a band called The Doors. And Jim said, Judy, you don't understand.
Oh,
it's
man.
The Doors of Perception. It's
right.
Aldous Huxley loaded on acid. And so it was kind of a remarkable touchstone. That you talk about the beginning. Well, that was certainly the beginning of something, wasn't it?
It's an amazing. First of all, that story is worth the price of admission alone.
Yeah. Oh, it's totally.
But yeah, okay. Absolutely. So wait a minute. So your first spoken word record was Language Commando in '86, right?
Language Commando. Yeah. Language Commando was mostly a compilation of radio visits.
Okay.
When I started recording for Freeway Records, it was Harvey Robert Kubernick, was an entrepreneur and a record producer, and he decided to get all of these people who were kind of involved in music, but also poets and other authors, including, like, he even recorded street creatures leaning on lampposts and doing monologues. I mean, he recorded possibly six sides, three double-sided, three double-pocket spoken word CDs with a lot of musical backdrop, Mark. There was a lot of music on that, and mostly because the musicians were reading out of tour books and journals. And
wow.
So, yes, the main impact was spoken word, but there was a lot of music going on, talked about and played.
What I want to learn more about is how you put the music with the word, and the final product sounds like it's been rehearsed to the nth degree. It's perfect.
That's the beauty of it. There was maybe it would have sounded a lot different if it was rehearsed, but basically, when they Hen House Studios invited me to write a record. So, like everything, it's like writing a book. You just write it as a recording project. And I was leaving for an assignment in New Mexico. Plays of mine were going to be done in Albuquerque. So I did some scratch vocals so they could put music together no matter, kind of select incidental music.
Right.
Okay, so I leave, and John Densmore, who'd recorded his album Tribal Jazz at Hen House Studios, came in for a visit and said, "Hey, you want to hear what Ford is doing? Listen to this." So he played, but what the studio did was put on, just so to get an idea of what background music would sound like, he put electric drums on there and synthesizer. And that was kind of makeshift music, mm-hmm. just to give him an idea of the balance between music and whatever my voice was doing. So Densmore said, you can't have electric drums behind that guy. Okay. And so he said, "Let me come in and lay down drum tracks on each one of these vocals." And while I was in New Mexico, this is what was going on. So I came back, and when I found out what had happened in the mystique of Hen House Studios, I called Ray and I said, "Ray, guess who's playing drums on my record? John Densmore." And Ray said, "I want to be on that record." I said, "Well, okay.
You're not going to say no."
No, I said, "What's the most comfortable room for you to be in?" And he said, I love to work in Studio D in Sausalito. And that's where Hen House went up for 2 days and recorded Ray Manzarek playing everything. Oh. Clavinet, Casio, grand piano, Hammond B3 organ, and I think it was even a thumbtack upright piano on one of those. So that was what happened. And when he left the studio, he pulled on my coat and he said, "You know what you want to do? You want to call Robbie and ask him if he wants to be on this record."
Oh my God.
So I called Robbie. I went up to his crib, and we sat around and chatted. And I said, "Robbie, this is what's going on. These two guys are jumping on board, but this is not MCF and the Doors. That's not what the album is. That's not what it is." I'm telling him this. I said, I don't want it to be. I want it to be just my musical brothers backing me up, and we're having a good time. So he said, "Well, have Harlan at Hen House send me a loop of everything that you've recorded with everything that John and Ray put together and added to the mix." And so Harlan did that. I went to Seattle and to do some work. And when I came back, I said, "Well, Robbie, what did you think? You want to record on this thing?" He said, "I already laid guitar tracks on all your records." So that was how that worked. And it turned out to be, and Robbie will always reminds people of this, this is the last recording that all surviving members of the Doors played on together.
And also, there's background vocals too, aren't there?
Background vocals, that was the idea. Harlan said, "You know, you've done everything, but the one thing you've never added to the mix is vocals." vocal transitions going on behind you. And so I said, well, so he had written some music to go along with it. He got this vocalist, Tommy Jordan, who is he recorded vocals on other albums before, and he was on a Grammy winning record in France, I think. So I said, okay, I've tried everything but that. And I listened to it, and a lot of people, a lot of purists, they pull on my coat, you know, and they say, look, you didn't have to have vocals on there. I said, I've done everything else but vocals. Maybe vocals would be a way to translate what I'm doing verbally.
Yeah.
Maybe that may, let's try, let, you know, I'll try everything a couple of times. Not just once, I'll try everything, you know, at least twice. And so there is one dry reading, I think, on there. Isn't there a dry reading? So I did that on Fire Escapes, which is another recording project.
That's another. That's on SST Records.
Yeah, that's your SST. You know what SST really means? Super Surf Tunes.
Well, and they put out a lot of the sort of
surf punk,
surf punk songs. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's how I got to know SST Records.
Yeah, I was in studio when Harvey Kubernick was recording all of these vocals to put these three albums together. I was in studio with Black Flag, the Dream Syndicate, people from X, people from the Blasters, people from Brat, Fibonacci's. You know, I was suddenly connecting with all of this alternative recording that was going on at places like SST, Maverick Recording Studios.
Yeah, yeah.
And Kubernick, to his credit, pulled all of us together in kind of creating a global village of spoken word and music. And he was too early. Nobody got it. Nobody really got it. They didn't really connect with it as they should have. It got some airplay, but don't get me wrong. I mean, there were some...
On like alternative and college radio stations.
Oh, terrific reviews.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, oh, yeah, I was. I showed up on radio stations with Henry Rollins, Jello Biafra of Dead Kennedys. And as a result of all of those connections, I actually went on a spoken word tour with Jello. Oh,
I remember when he did that tour.
We started out at the Vine Street Bar and Grill.
Okay.
We went to Pomona College, and we ended up at the Great American Music Hall in San Francisco. that being a part of my life never would have happened without Kubernick's project. Never would have happened. So he might have paid a lot of dues with that. He might have felt a lot of frustration and grief behind people not paying the kind of attention to it that they should have. But he sure made a mark, didn't he?
Oh, man.
That stuff. Yeah.
Let me do a station ID. You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. We're welcoming back, and it's always a pleasure to talk to him, Michael C. Ford. He's a record.
Boy, are you ever a pro? Well, you do an ID right on the spot.
Yeah. Michael C. Ford.
Listen to this, man. I was doing Texas radio, and I was on the air. I said, now, you've got to come up right when I give you a high sign, you've only got a minute because we go right into NPR. We go right into NPR news. So I had to time it. So I read this final piece and just said, later on, everybody, and bang, right away.
Right.
At instant, NPR news came on. So it's radio is a drill, isn't it?
You know, I've been at the station now a long time, since 1971. in various capacities. I used to be the head of the alternative rock department right when you recorded with all those artists. So I'm real familiar with Dead Kennedys, Jello Biafra, and all those bands that you mentioned. I played.
Did you ever get the Kubernik discs in your...
No. I wish we had.
Wow.
Well, you know, we'll talk about this later. Now, I've got to talk to you about a bunch of... I have so much stuff I want to talk to you about. It's amazing. One of the things... You're involved in so many projects. First of all, you're a playwright, too.
Yeah. Now, that... Exactly. I feel like I'm committing treason every time I write a play because I'm not following the format. I'm not really doing what I'm supposed to do. But the very first Equity produced play was in 1981 by the Odyssey Theater Ensemble in West LA. It's still going on. It's one of the notorious theater ensembles on the West Coast.
Okay.
And another one was featured. I wrote a play for the Dada Festival in the Bay Area.
Why am I not surprised? Not surprised?
But that was my kind of... I'd written a little bit, but nothing really that was acceptable. These probably weren't acceptable, but somebody jumped on it. Now... one stage play of mine was based on translations of pieces of poetry. Most of them show up in Women Under the Influence.
Okay.
It was a French actress named Clotilde Monot. And during the early 90s. And it was seen... I mean, she translated these pieces of poetry as though they were character monologues, as though they were internal monologues, and she created this character that kept coming in and going out of these vocal deliveries. The performance spaces were varied. Some, obviously, in fixed theater spaces in the city of Paris, and others different informal locations. I think I mentioned going to Albuquerque, I had 3 one-act plays staged at the Auxiliary Dog Playhouse, and it was under the direction of the artistic director of the Ox Dog, and her name is Victoria Liberatore. Essentially proving that if you want to play directed with style, always have an Italian direct it. I think that's what we need. We need to take that home with us. So make a note on that, Mark.
I'm writing it down right now, Michael.
Yeah, so all three plays starred, and this is important because the actress was truly amazing. Her name is... Jessica Osborne, and she comes out of the Italia Conti Academy of Performing Arts in London. So she was all the while able to bring class and dignity to my words although her early training and her acuity allow her to essay roles in classic theater, you know, like Medea, Nora in The Dollhouse,
Michael, I want to stop you.
Merchant of Venice, by Willie the Shake. So when she's called upon to do American voices, this is what makes her truly amazing. She sounds like, she does Waiting for Lefty by Clifford Odets, and she talks like she just got off the subway in Yonkers.
Oh, man.
You know, I wish she wasn't so far away. I could have used her when one of those plays was staged at the Stella Adler Theater in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Another one was staged at the Beyond Baroque Foundation Visual Arts Stage in Venice, California.
I got to stop you for a minute. We're going to run out of time, by the way, but that's okay because I'm going to have you back. I want to ask you how it feels to watch your words come out of another person's mouth? Like, are you sitting there, like, on edge?
In terms of...
You've written the words for the play. You're watching somebody else say them. What does it feel like? Because you're so used to saying your own words. You know, you're the person that's reciting
stuff. When I'm watching Jessica Osborne, for example.
Yeah.
Essay a monologue, which is a one-act play. The one-act play is a monologue. And she's doing a solo performance in this eccentric monologue titled Trixie Honeymoon's Last Press Conference. And when I'm listening to her say my words, it's like a gift. It's like she's handing me a gift.
Okay. This is what I want to hear. This is what I want to hear.
She said, after the evening was over, and they did a Q&A, and they were talking to Mark Pruitt and Jessica, who were the two people in all three plays. She said, "I'll do anything you write. I'll do anything you want me to do." So that was you don't often hear that.
No, you don't. You know, Michael, we're out of time.
I love it. The fact that we went by like a breath. I don't think I said anything, did I?
No, you did. You did. You said a lot. And the other thing is, I feel like I'm hearing a history I didn't know.
Yeah.
And I really like that. I really, really appreciate that. And so I'm going to have you back because I still have four other pages.
Is it all right that I didn't read anything?
Yeah, yeah.
People don't expect.
Well, they're going to hear you in and out in the background.
That's right. You're going to play track.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so, well, that's good. Well, then
but I'm going to have you back and read some stuff, too.
No, we've done the job.
No, we haven't. I still have a lot of questions to ask.
We've done our job, and we don't even get paid for it.
I need to know about baseball in you, but don't answer now. We're going to have to...
Make a note and ask me. I'll tell you. I'm going to the reliquary, the baseball reliquary.
Yeah, yeah. Don't give out any information. Save it for the next interview.
Yeah, well, I just happen to be going there this Saturday. Tommy John is going to be honored.
Oh, man. Okay, stop. This is too much.
Tommy John, man. Nancy Faust, who played organ for the Chicago White Sox, is going to come and play organ.
Oh, man.
It's going to be, that group of people. Well, we'll talk about it the next time.
Okay. My returning guest tonight, and he'll be back, trust me, is recording artist, performing artist, poet, playwright, Michael C. Ford. You want to hear some of the stuff that we're playing in the background? Pick up the CD, Look Each Other in the Ears. His latest written collection is Women Under the Influence. Michael, it's a pleasure as always.
Okay.
Good night.
Pleasure for me, too.
Yeah. You listen to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. Mark Lynch. Good night.
The weekend I arrive, crystalline kids throw stolen